Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in. My name is Brendan Nipp and we're here from the Run Lab today with our sixth episode, and today we'll be talking about something more practical. Now we've been at this for almost 2 months now, and I get a lot of questions rolling in, and one of the most common things people ask me is, how do I get faster at running? Now, let's draw up a scenario. Let's say that you listened to episode 2 a few weeks back and that you went out to the store and you got a brand new pair of runners. They fit you pretty well and you've been building up the mileage every week now. You're feeling better and you're doing 5K here, 5K there. And while you're getting used to the distance and feeling less sore, you don't seem to be getting faster. So why is that? Is it because you're not eating properly to support your running? Or maybe it's because you're running too long. Should you do those intervals you hear your running friends talk about all the time? Now that's a lot of questions, but today we're going to clear that up for you. And while there are many, many individual differences between runners, there are a wide variety of things that apply to everyone physiologically as barriers that stop us from developing speed to a certain extent. But as always, for those of you tuning into this podcast for the first time, the information presented today is based on research, clinical experience, and my own thoughts and preferences, and is not intended as a substitute for medical advice. So if you're suffering from a specific injury or condition, please seek help from a registered physiotherapist or other qualified health practitioner so that you can be accurately assessed or diagnosed. So it shouldn't be surprising to say that physiology limits us. If I'm trying to lift something twice as big or twice as heavy as me, I'm going to either not be able to do it or I'm going to struggle trying. Much in the same way, there are elements of our anatomy that stop us from being able to run faster. It just isn't as obvious right from the get-go. So to figure out what we have to do to run faster, we have to understand what our bodies are doing when we run. See, when we run, we use a complex network of muscles that we have to move our bodies through space repeatedly. Our muscles are doing work. So they're physically moving weight and mass through space at high speeds, speeds that we want to be faster. So what is really the difference between running slowly and running faster, right? We move the same body parts, but just a little bit faster or slower, right? On a technicality, yes, that's true. But theoretically, there is a slight caveat to that. See, when we run faster, there's more of a strain on our joints, our muscles, and our bodies than simply running longer. There's just something about speed that compounds that stress. So while it's relatively straightforward if someone were to ask how they can run longer distances, it's just not quite so simple when we talk about speed. So when you train, you always have to ask yourself why you're doing what you're doing. There has to be a purpose, right? A method to the madness. You have to think that the combination of the speed or distance that you run is going to work to improve a certain part of your running. It has to be targeted and specific. There's a time to run hard and push yourself, but you want to be running and working efficiently, not just working and running hard. See, a short, fast run is going to target exactly that, speed. And a long, slow run is going to work your endurance. The complicated part comes with the interesting variations of runs and workouts that target everything in between. So if we want to get faster, then shouldn't we just replicate that in our training? Right? Running shorter and faster distances should do the trick, right? But there is a problem, okay? And the problem lies in the notion that in order to run a certain speed, you have to be able to run close to that speed. So think about it. You come to me and you tell me, hey Brendan, I'm running a couple times a week now, but I don't seem to be getting much faster. If anything, I feel like I really couldn't be going any slower, or I'd be walking quickly. So how can I get faster if this is almost as fast as I can run already? Do you see the dilemma? Imagine if you had a kid that was in the fifth grade, and they were trying to learn how to do grade 6 math. Sure, you could just attempt grade 6 math problems again and again, and you'd probably learn a thing or two and get better at it. But at the end of the day, you may not be capable of consistently doing a lot of grade 6 math problems, which means that your improvement is going to be a lot slower. So much like a teacher would in that situation, The best outcome happens when we learn the tools that we need in order to perform at that next level. So if we've established that running as fast as you can isn't enough to get faster, so then what tools do we need to run faster? And that tool is strength. The more effective way to support your running is to do strength and conditioning to target the muscles that are used often when you run. Muscles that are stronger will be able to move the same weight and mass, but faster. So by no means am I saying that your running routines and your running workouts shouldn't change, but if your goal is to run faster, then you know what? Yes, it would be functional and practical to run intervals that are fast, but if you boil it down to one principle, it's that in order to get fast, you not only have to run fast, but you also have to do it for as long as you can. And if you're really pushing the speed, then it stands to reason that logically you won't be able to maintain that speed for very long, hence the need for strength training. As an illustration, let's take Eliud Kipchoge, the current marathon world record holder, as an example. For simplicity of math, let's break down his world record marathon time and consider that marathon time to be exactly 2 hours. That equates to 42.2 kilometers in 120 minutes. That's 350 meters per minute and 100 meters in 17.14 seconds. Let's be honest. Many of us could drive out to the track right now and sprint 100 meters in less than 17 seconds. But the problem is that none of us would be able to sustain that for very long. So do you see the problem? We have to get as close to our target speed as we can, but the closer we get, the shorter duration we'll be able to maintain it. And that is what limits the amount of work we'll be able to put in. And if it limits the work we can put in, it's going to limit the rate of our improvement. So that's why we always incorporate strength training into the programming of a runner. Don't get me wrong, if you run consistently, you'll develop more endurance and you'll be able to improve as a runner for sure. But those improvements will plateau when you reach a point or you attempt something that you don't have the capacity to do. And so instead of simply going on tempo runs, doing intervals at the track, and relying on practical running alone to make you feel better and more comfortable, add a strength and conditioning aspect into your training program. Trust me when I say that you will feel a million times better trying to push the pace when you've gotten some strength and conditioning under your belt instead of just lacing up the runners day in and day out. So what now? You've come to the conclusion that it's not enough to just run, but what does that look like? This is where the individual differences show up, because depending on what exactly limits you as a runner, that will dictate how we design a training program. So we're going to walk through a couple of different scenarios that I see quite often. And before you skip over a segment in order to get to the information you feel is more relevant to you, at some point during your running endeavors, you will find yourselves in the shoes of both the runners I'm about to mention. So let's take a look at scenario one. In scenario one, you're runner A, and you've been running for a little while now. Not super consistently, but you've been trying to etch out the time the last couple of months. You're managing to drop a routine and getting consistent with getting some kilometers, and it actually feels pretty good. You're running 5 or 6 kilometers here and there, and you're actually not too sore with that distance anymore, and you want to push yourself to run faster, but you don't seem to be able to. You say to yourself, well, I mean, I can definitely sprint faster than I'm running, but that's just not the same. That's only for a short amount of time. So what do we do with runner A? Well, first off, it's great that there's consistency in schedule, because consistency in running is what breeds improvement. Running is not a sport where you can come and go as you please and still expect the same results. The improvements you get as a runner are built upon the improvements of the days and weeks prior. It's also a good sign that runs are becoming less sore. This means that there's adaptation happening, and the ability to run and sprint faster than your current fastest running pace is also a good sign. That means that there's physiology in place to allow a faster speed, it just can't be maintained. For this runner, I would say that diversifying their runs would be the first step. Instead of going on, say, 2 5-kilometer runs a week totaling 10 kilometers, I would tell them to go on a 6-kilometer run at their normal pace once a week, and for their other run, the 4 kilometers remaining, do some speed training. Now, speed training can look really different for different people and comes down to what the runner is comfortable with. I personally love being at the track because it kind of reminds me of the days back in elementary school and the regional and provincial track meets that seemed at the time to be like the biggest thing I would ever do in life. And it kind of reminds me of watching the Olympics on TV. But running fast can actually be uncomfortable. It pushes you into uncharted territory and asks that you stay there. So if you feel more comfortable doing 8, 9, or even 10, 200 meter or so sprints, then that's the way I would do it. But if doing those seems intimidating to you and you find yourself reaching someone in order to run at that pace, then I would just settle into a 1 kilometer warm-up followed by 3 or 4 intervals of 3 minutes or so at progressively faster paces to avoid injury, and then finishing it up with another 1 kilometer warm-up. The idea behind these runs are to clock enough overall mileage. In this situation, this run is 4 kilometers in length, to allow continuous development of endurance, but to also save enough energy during the run to produce strong efforts when speeding up. And it is in these high quality effort intervals at faster speeds that allow you to stay at top speed for longer with less effort. Now let's look at scenario 2. In scenario 2, you're runner B and you've been running for a long time as well, and you've really gotten into a good groove with running. You don't run that fast, just a jog, but you're okay with that. You start getting out 2-3 times a week, nothing incredibly structured, and you've tried some shorter and faster runs before, but you don't really have much in the tank to go faster, and they didn't feel great anyway. So you kind of settled into your routine, and now you've gotten into a rhythm of running your 12, 13, or 14 kilometers a week, and it's just starting to feel mundane. But you can't seem to go any faster, so you're wondering how you're going to make that jump. So what do we do with runner B? Well, with runner B, despite the longer distances, they seem to be struggling with something different than runner A. With runner A, they had the capacity to go faster, but they just weren't conditioned for it. With runner B, they're conditioned to the distance they run, which is actually more than runner A, but they just don't have the capacity to go faster. So how do you develop this capacity? Firstly, it's great that runner B doesn't have the capacity to go faster because that actually means they're pushing themselves to a certain extent and a certain threshold with their running. They're using the machinery of their anatomy to the full extent, and now they just want to know how to increase the output of that machinery. It's a good place to be because having not done anything in the realm of increasing that capacity, even a little bit of dedication to increasing speed can yield great effects. So if you find yourself in this boat and you're thinking about your running and you can honestly say, hey, you know what? I think I'm going almost as fast as I can already. And I think I need to know what to do in order to get faster, then you're in the right place. In order to get faster, you're going to have to do some strength and conditioning. Exactly what we target will depend on the way you run, but in a very general sense, we can target the major muscle groups involved in the running process. And the major muscle groups involved in running are the front of your hips, or what we call the hip flexors, the quads, which are the front of your thighs, your hamstrings, which are the back of your thighs, your calves, which are in your lower leg, and your glutes, which are behind your hips. So instead of spending your days in the gym to target all that, you can simplify it by incorporating compound exercises that move more than one joint at a time. By doing this, you can have a strength and conditioning program with only a select few exercises, and it doesn't become a massive time commitment. But I'm going to save you some time. If you're going to ask me on the spot what three exercises I'm going to choose for a runner in general if they're getting into strength and conditioning, I'm going to be making my runners do three exercises. One, split squats or lunges, right? So these will target the triple extension motion that we need when we propel ourselves during running. The extension of the hip, the knee, and ankle in a coordinated fashion. Number two, deadlifts, as a traditional means of targeting the hamstring. But if you don't have a barbell or weights at home, that's okay too. There are exercises that can target the hamstring that only utilize body weight, such as a single leg bridge with an emphasis on hamstring activation. Now, this third exercise was a little bit harder to choose because there's a lot of good ones left over. For example, you can't go wrong with squats or glute exercises or even exercises that target balance and stability. But I feel that the hip flexors or the front of your hip are often neglected. So I would say that some form of momentum-based exercise for the hip flexors to practice drilling the A phase of running, or the same movement that you all probably recognize as high knees, is required. The importance of that A phase, or being able to do that high knee movement, is that the momentum you're able to generate into hip flexion, or the stronger you bring your knee forward, creates a bigger propulsion that pulls your body weight forward. Much like how a cyclist clips into a road bike and not only pushes the pedals, but also pulls the pedals as they bring the knees up. If you want to learn more, there are specific instructions on the first two exercises on my YouTube channel called The Run Lab. I'll post the link below in the episode summary, and if there's anything else you want me to cover in future episodes or videos, please leave a like, a comment, and subscribe. So back to strengthening. So now that we've got the exercises, how much do we do them? And this is where it's going to be a little bit different than what you're used to, and I'll explain. Typically, you've probably heard a lot about 3 sets of 10 kind of exercises, but what if I told you that I wanted you to do less than 8? If we're talking about traditional strengthening and conditioning, you don't want to be able to do a lot of repetitions within a set. Why? Because the ability to do 10, 12, or even 15 repetitions within a set means that the resistance isn't high enough to challenge muscular strength and power. Being able to do 15 means that you're focusing on muscular endurance. And this isn't by any means a bad thing, it's just that we're already running, and that's supposed to be our muscular endurance. Your strength and conditioning program is meant to get you stronger and more powerful so that your capacity for speed is higher. So if you take nothing away from today's episode, I'll say it again. If your goal is to increase your top speed, then you need to lift, and you need to lift heavy. But what heavy means will vary depending on who you are. But I think a good guideline would be that you feel tired within a set of 8. Then repeating 2 to 4 sets of 8 or less. But the resistance or weight has to be challenging at that repetition count. It might seem obvious to some of you, but again, with this kind of weight, make sure that you get your technique checked out by a trained therapist or professional, because it can be dangerous if you're lifting that heavy with this kind of resistance incorrectly. And so this brings us to the notion of stress. So one thing that many runners don't realize is that higher speeds apply a significantly higher amount of strain on your body than higher distances. And this is a key point, because typically your body will tell you when you've gone farther than you're used to. There's soreness that gradually builds up. But with running fast, you're typically not doing continuous runs, or you're adding that into a strengthening program. So it's not as noticeable when it becomes too much. And it can take longer to develop speed than it does to develop a tolerance and endurance to go farther. So as you guys head out to run, I encourage you guys to mix it up. If you feel like you're hitting a plateau with your running, work on something else for a while. Add in some strengthening. Go for some tempo runs, some intervals at the track. Running is a lifelong endeavor, and you're not always going to see gains and improvements immediately. Sometimes it takes weeks, months, or even years for the work to accumulate into something noteworthy. And I see runners all the time that think that they've hit their ceiling or that they're never going to hit a personal best again. And I ask them, Are you doing all that you can to help support the achievement of those goals? See, before we close off, I want to leave you guys with an encouraging thought. For those of you who tuned into the 2020 U.S. Olympic Marathon Time Trials in Atlanta, Georgia, you'll know that amongst the three men who qualified to be on the U.S. Marathon Olympic team is Abdi Abdirahman, who at the age of 43 becomes the oldest runner to ever make the Olympic team. Now, before you call me crazy, I'm not going to sit here and say that you can all be Olympic runners if you try hard enough. Of course not. There's clearly a natural-born talent that allows for him to be able to do what he does, as with anyone who's able to run at that caliber. But my point is that at the age of 43, there's no way that he is in his physical peak. So the notion that we have to be at our physical and age-based peak in order to beat our personal bests is false. If Abdi at the age of 43 can perform to such a high level that he can still qualify for the Olympics, then I don't think it is a stretch that with some speed work, a strength and conditioning program, and perhaps even a tune-up on your diet, that you can't set records for yourselves. So there you have it. My name is Brendan Ip, registered physiotherapist based out of Vancouver, British Columbia, and coming to you from the Run Lab. Thanks for tuning in this week, and as always, please leave a like, a comment, or any requests down in the comments below, and don't forget to visit us on YouTube. The link will be down in the description. Until next time.